Chapter 20. A quote from My Time as a Cadet, a memoir by General Augustine Melgren. Accusing a wing leader of wrongdoing is the most dangerous of all accusations. If you're right, then we've failed as a quadrant to select the best wing leaders. If you're wrong, you're dead. Orin Seifert. Captain Fitzgibbons finishes reading the death roll and closes the scroll as we stand in formation the next morning, our breath creating clouds in the chilled air. We commend their souls to Malik. There's no room for sorrow in my heart for six of the eight names, not when I'm shifting my weight to soothe the ache of black and blue along my ribs and ignoring the way other riders stare at the ring of bruises I wear around my throat. The two others on today's list are third years from Second Wing, killed on a training operation near the Breivik border, according to breakfast gossip. And I can't help but wonder if that's where Zayden had been before coming to my rescue last night. I can't believe they tried to kill you while you were sleeping. Rhiannon's still seething at breakfast after I told our table what happened. Maybe Zayden is fighting to keep last night's events a secret, to hide what a liability I really am to him. Because no one else in leadership knows. He didn't say a single word after I told him who unlocked the door, so I have no clue if he believes me or not. Even worse, I think I'm getting used to it. Either I have kick-ass compartmentalization skills, or I really am acclimating to always being a target. Captain Fitzgibbons makes some minor announcements, and I tune him out as someone strides our way, cutting through the space between the flame and tail sections of our wing. Just like it always does, my stupid, hormone-driven heart stutters at the first sight of Zayden. Even the most effective poisons come in pretty packages, and Zayden's exactly that, as beautiful as he is lethal. He looks deceptively calm as he approaches, but I can feel his tension, as if it's my own, like a panther prowling toward his prey. The wind ruffles his hair, and I sigh at the completely unfair advantage he has over every man in this courtyard. He doesn't even have to try to look sexy. He just is. Oh, shit. This feeling right here, the way my breath catches and my entire body draws tight when he's near, is why I haven't taken anyone to bed or celebrated like the rest of my perfectly normal friends. This feeling is why I haven't wanted anyone else. Because I want him. There aren't enough curse words in the world for this. His gaze locks with mine just long enough to quicken my pulse before he addresses Dane, ignoring Fitzgibbon's announcements behind him. There's a change to your squad role. Wing leader? Dane questions, his spine straightening. We just absorbed four from the dissolution of the third squad. Yes. Zayden looks to the right, where second squad tail section stands at attention. Belden, we're making a role change. Yes, sir. The squad leader nods once. Atos, Von Penley will be leaving your command, and you'll be gaining Liam Mari from tail section. Dane's mouth snaps shut, and he nods. We all watch as the two first-year riders exchange places. Penley's only been with us since threshing, so there's no heartfelt goodbye from our original squad. But the other three grumble. Liam nods at Zayden, and my stomach twists. I know exactly why he's being put under Dane's command. The guy is massive, as tall as Sawyer, and as built as Dane, with light blonde hair, prominent nose, blue eyes, and the sprawling rebellion relic that begins at his wrist and disappears under the sleeve of his tunic gives his mission away. I do not need a bodyguard, I snap at Zayden. Am I out of line speaking to a wing leader that way? Absolutely. Do I care? Not one bit. He ignores me, facing Dane. Liam is statistically the strongest first year in the quadrant, He has the fastest time up the gauntlet, hasn't lost a single challenge, and is bonded to an exceptionally strong red dagger tail. Any squad would be lucky to have him, and he's all yours, Atos. You can thank me when you win the squad battle in the spring. Liam steps into formation behind me, taking Penley's place. I do not need a bodyguard, I repeat a little louder this time. I could give two fucks who hears me. One of the first years behind me gasps, mortified by my audacity, no doubt. Imogen snorts. Good luck with that approach. Zayden walks past Dane and stands directly in front of me, leaning into my space. You do, though, as we both learned last night, and I can't be everywhere you are. But Liam here, he points back to the blonde tier. He's a first year, so he can be in every class, at every challenge, and I even had him assigned to library duty. So I hope you get used to him, Soren Gale. You're overstepping. My nails bite into my palms. You haven't begun to see overstepping, he warns, his voice dropping low, sending a shiver down my spine. Any threat against you is a threat against me. And as we've already established, I have more important things to do than sleep on your floor. Heat flushes up my neck and stains my cheeks. He is not sleeping in my room. Of course not. He freaking smirks, and my traitorous stomach dips. I had him moved into the one next to yours. Wouldn't want to overstep. He turns on his heel and walks away, headed back to his place at the front of our formation. Fucking mated dragons, Dane seethes, keeping his eyes forward. Fitzgibbons finishes his announcements and steps to the back of the dais, which would usually signal the end of formation. But Commandant Pancheck takes the podium. He makes it a habit to avoid morning formation, which means something is up. What's going on with Pancheck? Rhiannon asks at my side. Not sure. I take a deep breath, wincing at the pain in my ribs. It has to be something big if he's fumbling with a codex up there, Rhiannon says. Quiet, Dane orders, glancing back over his shoulder at us for the first time this morning. He does a double take, his eyes flaring wide as he catches sight of my neck. Vi? He hasn't spoken to me since our fight yesterday. Gods, how has it been less than 24 hours when I feel like a completely different person? I'm fine, I assure him, but he's still staring at my throat, locked in shock. Squad leader Atos, people are staring. We hold way more than our share of the attention as Commandant Pancheck begins to speak at the podium, telling us that there's another matter to handle this morning. But Dane won't look away. Dane! He blinks, jerking his gaze to mine. And the apology in those soft brown eyes clogs my throat. Is that what Ryerson meant by last night? I nod. I didn't know. Why didn't you tell me? Because you wouldn't believe me even if I did. I'm fine, I repeat, nodding toward the dais. Later. He turns, but the motion is reluctant. It has been brought to my attention as your commandant that a breach of the codex has occurred, Pancheck calls out over the courtyard. As you know, breaches of our most sacred laws are not to be tolerated, Pancheck continues. This matter will be addressed here and now. Will the accuser please step forward? Someone's in trouble, Rhiannon whispers. Think Riddick finally got caught into Von Varen's bed? That's hardly against the codex, Riddick murmurs from behind us. He's the executive officer for Second Wing. I send a pointed look over my shoulder. And? Riddick shrugs, grinning without a touch of remorse. Fraternizing with command is frowned upon, not unlawful. I sigh, facing forward. I miss sex. I really do, and it's not just the physical gratification either. There's a sense of connection in those moments that I crave, a momentary banishment of loneliness. The first is something I'm sure Zayden would be more than capable of providing, if he ever thought of me that way. But the second, he's the last person I should be craving. But lust and logic never seem to go hand in hand. If you're looking for a little fun, I'm happy to oblige, Riddick starts, shoving his floppy brown hair off his forehead with a wink. I miss good sex, I counter, smothering a smile as someone walks from the front of formation toward the dais, indistinguishable through the rows of the squads ahead of us. Besides, apparently you're spoken for. Have to admit, it feels good to tease a friend about something so trivial. It's a tiny slice of normalcy in an otherwise macabre environment.
We're not exclusive, Riddick counters.
It's like Rhiannon and what's her name? Tara, Rhiannon offers. Will you all shut the hell up? Dane barks in his superior officer voice. Our mouths snap shut. Mine drops open again when I realize it's Zayden climbing the steps to the dais. My stomach lurches as I suck in a tight breath. This is about me, I whisper. Dane glances back at me, confusion furrowing his brow before whipping his attention toward the dais, where Zayden now stands at the podium, somehow managing to fill the entire stage with his presence. From what I remember reading, his father had that same magnetism, the ability to hold and capture a crowd with nothing but his words. Words that led to Brennan's death. Early this morning, he begins, his deep voice carrying over the formation. A rider in my wing was brutally, illegally attacked in her sleep, with the intent of murder, by a group primarily composed of unbondeds. A collection of murmurs and gasps fills the air, and Dane's shoulders stiffen. As we all know, this is a violation of Article 3, Section 2 of the Dragon Rider's Codex, and, in addition to being dishonorable, is a capital offense. I feel the weight of a dozen glances, but it's Zayden's I feel most of all. His hands clench the sides of the podium. Having been alerted by my dragon, I interrupted the attack along with two other fourth-wing riders. He dips his chin toward our wing, and two riders, Garrick and Bodhi, break formation, then climb the steps to stand behind Zayden, their hands at their sides. As it was a matter of life and death, I personally executed six of the would-be murderers, as witnessed by Flame Section Leader Garrick Tavis and Tail Section Executive Officer Bodhi Duran. Both tears. How convenient. Nadine, one of our new additions to the squad, said from the row behind Riddick and Liam. I look back over my shoulder and pin her with a glare. Liam keeps his eyes forward. But the attack was orchestrated by a rider who fled before I arrived. Zayden continues, his voice rising. A rider who had access to the map of where all first years are assigned to sleep. And that rider must be brought to swift justice. Shit, this is about to get ugly. I call you to answer for your crime against Cadet Soren Gale. Zayden's focus shifts to the center of the formation. Wing leader Amber Mavis. The quadrant draws a collective breath before an uproar rips through the crowd. What the hell? Dane bites out. My chest tightens. Gods, I hate it when Dane proves me right. Rhiannon reaches for my hand, squeezing tight in support as every rider in the courtyard's attention pivots between Zayden, Amber, and me. She's a tier two, Nadine, Riddick says over his shoulder. Or are you only biased against marked ones? Amber's family stayed loyal to Navarre, so she wasn't forced to watch her parents executed and wasn't marked by a rebellion relic. Amber would never, Dane shakes his head. A wing leader would never. He turns completely to face me. Get up there and tell everyone that he's lying, Vi. But he's not, I say as gently as I can. It's impossible, his cheeks flush a mottled shade of red. I was there, Dane. The reality of his disbelief hurts so much more than I expected, like a blow to my already battered ribs. Wing leaders are beyond reproach. Then why are you so quick to call our own wing leader a liar? My brows rise in challenge, daring him to say what he's so careful to keep quiet. Behind him, Amber steps forward, separating herself from the formation. I have committed no such crime. See? Dane swings his arm, pointing toward the redhead. Put a stop to this right now, Violet. She was with them in my room, I say simply. Shouting won't convince him. Nothing will. That's impossible! He lifts his hands as though he's ready to cut my face. Let me see. The shock of what he intends to do has me stumbling backward. How have I forgotten that his signet allows him to see others' memories? But if I let him see my memory of Amber's participation, it will also show him that I stopped time, and I can't let that happen. I shake my head and take another step back. Give me the memory, he orders. Indignation lifts my chin. Touch me without permission, and you'll spend the rest of your life regretting it. Surprise ripples over his features. Wing leaders, Zayden projects his voice over the chaos. We need a quorum. Both Nyra and Septon Izar, the wing leaders for first and second wing, climb the stairs to the dais, passing by Amber as she stands utterly exposed in the courtyard. A familiar chaos fills the air, and we all look toward the ridgeline as six dragons curve along the mountain, flying straight for us. The biggest among them is Tairn. In a matter of seconds, they reach the citadel and hover over the courtyard walls. Wind from the strong beats of their wings blasts through the courtyard. Then, one by one, they land on their perch. Tairn at the center of the grouping. Every line of his frame exudes menace as his talons crush the masonry under his grip, and his narrowed, angry eyes focus on Amber. Sigale is perched to the right, taking her position behind Zayden. She's just as terrifying as she was that first day, but back then, I'd never imagined I'd bond a dragon even more frightening to everyone but me. Nyra's red scorpion tail looms behind her as well, and Septon's brown dagger tail mirrors the stance to the left. On the ends, puffing blasts of steam, are Commandant Panchek's green club tail and Amber's orange dagger tail.
Shit's about to get real, Sawyer says, breaking formation to stand at my side, and I feel Riddick at my back.
You can stop this all right now, Violet. You have to, Dane implores. I don't know what you saw last night, but it wasn't Amber. She cares too much about the rules to break them.
And she thinks I broke them by using my dagger on the last ascent of the gauntlet.
You're using this to get your revenge on my family, Amber shouts at Zayden, for not supporting your father's rebellion.
That's a low fucking blow. Zayden doesn't even acknowledge it as he turns to the other wing leaders. He isn't demanding proof like Dane. He believes me, and he's ready to execute a wing leader on nothing more than my word. As surely as if they're a physical structure, I feel my defenses crack on Zayden's behalf. Can you see my memories? I ask Tairn. Share them?
Yes.
His head snakes left and right ever so slightly.
A memory has never been shared outside of a mating bond. It's considered a violation.
Zayden's up there fighting because I told him it was her. Help him.
And gods, I admire him for it. I take a deep breath.
Only what they need to see.
Wanting and admiring? I'm so screwed. Tairn chuffs, and every dragon besides Sigale stiffens on the wall. Even Amber's. The riders are quick to follow, silence filling the courtyard. And I know they know.
That spineless wretch, Rhiannon seethes, her hand squeezing mine even tighter. Dane pales. Believe me now, I hurl it like the accusation it is. You're supposed to be my oldest friend, Dane, my best friend. There's a reason I didn't tell you.
He staggers backward. The wing leaders have formed a quorum, and are in unanimous agreement, Zayden announces, flanked by Nyra and Septon, while the Commandant hangs back. We find you guilty, Amber Mavis.
No, she shouts. It is no crime to rid the Quadrant of the weakest rider. I did it to protect the integrity of the wings. She paces in panic, looking to everyone, anyone for help. As a whole, the formation moves backward. And as is our law, your sentence will be carried out by fire, Nyra states. No! Amber looks to her dragon. Clyde!
Amber's orange dagger tail snarls at the other dragons and lifts a claw. Tairn swivels his massive head toward Clyde, his roar shaking the ground beneath my feet. Then he snaps his teeth at the smaller orange, and she retreats, her head hanging as she grips the wall again. The sight breaks my heart, not for Amber, but for Clyde.
Do you have to? I ask Tairn.
This is our way.
Please don't, I beg, forgetting to think the words. It's one thing to punish Amber, but Clyde will suffer as well. Maybe I could talk to Amber. Maybe we can still work through our issues. Maybe we can find common ground, turn our anger to friendship, or at least casual indifference. I shake my head, my heart pounding in my throat. I did this. I was so focused on whether anyone would believe me, I didn't stop to think what might happen if they did. I turn to Zayden and beg again, my voice breaking by the end. Please, give her a chance.
He holds my gaze, but doesn't so much as show a flicker of emotion.
I let someone live once, and he almost killed you last night, Silver One, Tairn says.
Then, as if this is all that really matters in the end.
Justice is not always merciful.
Clyde,
Amber whimpers. The courtyard's so unbelievably silent that the sound carries. The formation splits at the center. Tairn leans low, extending his head and neck past the dais toward where Amber stands. Then his teeth part. He curls his tongue, and he incinerates her with a blast of fire so hot, I can feel it from here. It's over in a heartbeat. A gruesome scream rends the air, shattering a window in the academic wing, and every rider slams their hands over their ears as Clyde mourns. Chapter 21. A quote from page 61, The Book of Brennan. Don't freak out if you can't immediately channel your dragon's powers, Mira. Yeah, I know you have to be the best at everything, but this isn't something you can control. They'll channel when they feel you're ready. And once they do, you better be ready to manifest a signet. Until then, you're not ready. Don't push it. This really isn't necessary, I glance sideways at Liam as we make our way toward the door of the archives. The cart doesn't even squeak anymore. He fixed that the very first day. So you've told me for the last week, he shoots me a grin, revealing a dimple. And yet, you're still here. Every day. All day. It's not that I don't like him. To my absolute annoyance, he's actually nice. Courteous, funny, and ridiculously helpful. He makes it difficult to loathe his constant presence, even though he leaves wood shavings and little piles everywhere he goes. Which is everywhere I go now. The guy is constantly whittling with that smaller knife of his. Yesterday, he finished the figurine of a bear. Until otherwise ordered, he says. I shake my head at him as Pearson jolts upright at the archive's doors, straightening his cream tunic. Good morning, Cadet Pearson.
You as well, Cadet Sorengail.
He offers me a polite smile, which dies as he glances at Liam.
Cadet Mari?
Cadet Pearson, Liam responds, as if the scribe's tone hadn't completely changed.
My shoulders tense as Pearson hurries to open the door. Maybe it's just that I haven't been around marked ones before Bezgaeth, but the outright hostility toward them is becoming glaringly, uncomfortably obvious to me. We walk into the archives and wait by the table just like every other morning.
How do you do that? I ask Liam in a hushed whisper. Handle when people are that rude without reacting.
You're rude to me all the time, he teases, drumming his fingers on the handle of the cart.
Because you're my babysitter, not because...
I can't even say it. Because I'm the son of the disgraced Colonel Mari? His jaw ticks, his brow furrowing for a heartbeat as he looks away.
I nod, my stomach sinking as I think back over the last few months.
I guess I'm really no better, though. I hated Zayden on sight, and I didn't know a single thing about him. Not that I do now, either. He's infuriatingly good at being completely inaccessible.
Liam scoffs, earning us a glare from a scribe near the back corner.
He has that effect on people, especially women. They either despise him for what his father did or want to fuck him for the same reason. Just depends on where we are.
You actually know him, don't you? I crane my neck to look up at him. He didn't just pick you to shadow me because you're the best in our year.
Just now catching on, huh?
A grin flashes across his face. I would have told you that on the first day if you hadn't been so busy huffing and puffing about the pleasure of my company.
I roll my eyes as Jacinia approaches, her hood up over her hair.
Hey, Jacinia, I sign.
Good morning,
she signs back, her mouth curving in a shy smile as her gaze darts up to Liam.
Good morning, he signs with a wink, clearly flirting.
It shocked me to my toes that first day that he knew how to sign, but honestly, I'd been a little judgy just because I didn't want a shadow.
Just these today?
Jacinia asks, inspecting the cart. And these. I reach for the list of requests amid their obvious glances and hand it to her.
Perfect.
Her cheeks flush, and she studies the list before putting it in her pocket.
Oh, and Professor Markham left before his daily report arrived to teach your briefing. Would you mind taking it over?
Happy to. I wait until she's pushing the cart away from us, then smack Liam's chest.
Stop it, I whisper out loud.
Stop what?
He watches her until she turns the corner at the first set of shelves.
Flirting with Jacinia. She's a long-term relationship woman, so unless that's what you're looking for, just don't.
His eyebrows hit his hairline.
How does anyone think long-term around here?
Not everyone is in a quadrant where death is less of a chance and more of a foregone conclusion.
I breathe in the scent of the archives and try to absorb a little of the peace it brings.
So you're saying that people still try to make cute little things like plans?
Exactly. And those some people is Jacinia. Trust me, I've known her for years.
Right, because you wanted to be a scribe when you grew up.
He scans the archives with an intensity that almost makes me laugh. As if there's any chance someone is going to lunge out of the shelves and come after me.
How did you know that?
I lower my voice as a group of second years passes, their expressions somber as they debate the merits of two different historians.
I did my research on you after I was, you know, assigned.
He shakes his head. I've seen you practicing this week with those blades of yours, Soren Gale. Ryerson was right. You would have been wasted as a scribe. My chest swells with more than a little pride.
That remains to be seen.
At least challenges haven't resumed. Guess enough of us are dying during flight lessons to hold off on killing more through hand to hand.
What did you want to be when you grew up? I ask, just to keep the conversation going.
Alive? He shrugs.
Well, that's something.
How do you know Zayden anyway? I'm not foolish enough to think that everyone in the province of Tirindor knows one another.
Ryerson and I were fostered at the same estate after the apostasy, he says, using the Tirish term for the rebellion, which I haven't heard in ages.
You were fostered? My mouth drops open.
fostering the children of aristocrats was a custom that died out after the unification of Navarre more than 600 years ago.
Well, yeah, he shrugs again.
Where did you think the kids of the traitors,
he flinches at the word,
went after they executed our parents? I look out over the sprawling shelves of texts, wondering if one of them holds the answer.
I didn't think. My throat catches on that last word.
Most of our great houses were given to nobles who had remained loyal. He clears his throat. As it should be.
I don't bother agreeing with what's obviously a conditioned reply. King Tari's response after the rebellion was swift, even cruel. But I was a 15-year-old girl too lost in her own grief to think mercifully on the people who'd caused my brother's death. The burning of Aricia, which had been Tirindor's capital, to the ground, had never sat well with me, though. Liam was the same age. It wasn't his fault his mother had broken faith with Navarre.
But you didn't go with your father to his new home?
His gaze swings toward mine and his brow furrows.
It's hard to live with a man who was executed on the same day as my mother.
My stomach sinks. No. No, that's not right. Your father was Isaac Mari, right? I've studied all the noble houses in every province, including Tirindor. Had I gotten something wrong?
Yes, Isaac was my father. He tilts his head, looking toward the area where Jacinia disappeared, and I get the distinct feeling he is over this conversation.
But he wasn't part of the rebellion. I shake my head, trying to make sense of it. He isn't on the death roll of the executions from Caldir.
You read the death roll from the Caldir executions?
His eyes flare. It takes all my courage, but I hold his stare. I needed to see that someone was on it.
He draws back slightly. Fenn Ryerson.
I nod. He killed my brother at the Battle of Aricia. My mind scrambles, trying to harmonize what I've read and what he's saying.
But your father wasn't on that roll.
But Liam was, as a witness.
Mortification sweeps over me.
What the hell am I doing? I'm so sorry, I shouldn't have asked.
He was executed at our family's house. His features tighten. Before it was given to another noble, of course. And yes, I watched as they did it that time, too. I already had the rebellion relic by then, but the pain was the same.
He looks away, his throat working.
Then I was sent to Tyrvain to be fostered by Duke Lindell, the same as Ryerson. My little sister was sent elsewhere.
They separated you?
My jaw practically unhinges. Neither fostering nor separating siblings is mentioned in any text I've read about the rebellion. And I've read a ton. He nods.
She's only a year younger than me, though, so I'll get to see her when she enters the quadrant next year.
She's strong, quick, and has good balance. She'll make it.
The edge of panic in his tone reminds me of Mira.
She could always choose another quadrant, I say softly, hoping it will soothe him.
He blinks at me.
We're all riders.
What?
We're all riders. It was part of the deal. We're allowed to live, allowed a chance to prove our loyalty, but only if we make it through the rider's quadrant.
He stares at me in bewilderment.
You don't know?
I mean, I shake my head. I know that the children of the leaders, the officers, were all forced into conscription. But that's all. A lot of those treaty addenda are classified.
I personally think the quadrant was chosen to give us the best chance of rising in rank. But others,
he grimaces.
Others think it's because the death rate is so much higher for riders, so they were hoping to kill us all off without having to do it themselves. I've heard Imogen say they originally figured the dragons have unimpeachable honor, so they'd never bond a marked one in the first place.
And now, they don't quite know what to do with us.
How many of you are there? I think of my mother and can't help but wonder how much of it she knows. How much of it she agreed to when she became the commanding general of Bezgaeth after Brennan's death.
Zayden's never... He pauses. 68 of the officers had kids under the age of 20. There are 107 of us, all who carry rebellion relics.
The oldest is Zayden, I murmur.
He nods. And the youngest is almost 6 now. Her name is Julianne.
I think I'm going to be sick. Is she marked?
She was born with it.
I understand it was done by Dragon, but what the fucking hell?
And it's all right that you ask. Someone should know. Someone should remember.
His shoulders rise and fall as he breathes deeply.
Anyway, is it hard for you to be in here? Or is it more of a comfort thing?
Subject change noted. I take in the rows of tables, slowly filling with scribes readying themselves for work, and imagine my father among them. It's like coming home, but not. And it's not that it's changed. This place never changes. Hell, I think change is the mortal enemy of a scribe. But I'm starting to realize that I've changed. I don't quite fit here. Not anymore.
Yeah, I get that.
Something in his voice tells me he really does. It's on the tip of my tongue to ask what the last 5 years were like for him. But Jacinia reappears, the cart laden with the requested tomes. I have everything here for you, she signs, then gestures to the scroll on top. And that is for Professor Markham. We'll make sure he gets it, I promise, leaning forward to take the cart. My high collar shifts, and Jacinia gasps, her hand flying to cover her mouth. Oh, gods, Violet, your neck! Her hand movements are sharp, and the sympathy in her eyes makes my chest tighten. Sympathy isn't a word found in our quadrant. There's rage, wrath, and indignation, but no sympathy. It's nothing. I put my collar back in place, covering the ring of yellowing bruises, and Liam reaches across me, taking the cart. We'll see you tomorrow. She bobs her head and wrings her hands as we turn for the door. Pearson closes it after we pass into the hallway. Ryerson taught me to fight during the years he was at Tervain. Liam's change of subject is appreciated, and no doubt intentional once again. I've never seen anyone move the way he does. He's the only reason I made it through the first round of challenges. He might not show it, but he takes care of his own.
Are you trying to sell me on his finer points?
We make the ascent, and I note with some satisfaction that my legs feel strong today. I love the days when my body cooperates.
We are slightly stuck with him for...
He makes a face.
Well, forever.
Or until one of us dies, I joke,
but it falls flat as we round the corner and take the path past the healer quadrant.
How can you do this, anyway? Guard someone whose own mother oversaw the wing that captured yours.
I've wanted to ask the question all week.
Wondering if you can trust me? He flashes another easy grin.
Yes, the answer is simple.
He laughs, the sound echoing off the tunnel walls and glass windows of the clinic.
Good answer. All I can say is that your survival is essential to Ryerson's, and I owe him everything. Everything.
He looks me straight in the eye for that last word, even as the cart hits a raised stone in the paved corridor.
The scroll on top tumbles to the floor, and I wince at the dull ache in my ribs as I hurry to retrieve it, and it unrolls along the slight slope of the passage. Got it! The thick parchment isn't eager to roll back into place, and I catch a sentence that makes me pause.
The conditions at Summerton are of particular concern. A village was ransacked, and a supply convoy looted last night.
What does it say? Liam asks. Summerton was attacked.
I flip the scroll to see if it's marked as classified, but it isn't.
On the southern border?
He looks as confused as I feel.
Yeah, I nod.
It's another high-altitude attack, too, if I remember my geography correctly. It says a supply convoy was looted.
I read a little further.
And the community's storage in nearby caves was ransacked. But that doesn't make sense. We have a trade agreement with Poromiel.
A raiding party, then.
I shrug. No clue. Guess we'll hear about it in battle brief today. Attacks along our southern borders are rising, all with the same description. Mountain villages are being torn apart wherever the wards weaken. Immense, incredible hunger strikes, my stomach gnawing on emptiness that demands to be appeased with the blood of Sorengale? Liam looks over at me, concern etched between his brows.
Tarn's awake, I manage to say, clutching my stomach like I'm the one who craves a flock of sheep,
or goats, or whatever he decides for the morning.
Good gods, please go eat something.
The same could be suggested to you, he snarls.
Such a morning person, aren't you?
The hunger dissipates, and I know it's because he's dampening the bond in that moment because I can't. His emotions only flow into me when they override his control.
Thank you.
And Darna?
Still sleeping. She'll be out another few days after using that much power.
Does it ever get any easier? I ask Liam. Being tackled by what they're feeling?
He winces.
Good question. Day keeps pretty good control of himself. But when he's angry, Liam shakes his head. It's supposed to help once they start channeling and we have the power to shield them out. But you know, Carr isn't going to bother with us until that happens. I'd already assumed Liam didn't have his abilities yet, considering he's with me in every single class. But it's comforting to know he's still in the waning population of powerless riders with me. While Andarna has given me her gift for stopping time, I'm pretty sure using it isn't going to be a regular occurrence, especially if it takes her days to recover.
So, Tarn hasn't channeled to you either, right?
Liam asks, a look of uncertainty, vulnerability on his face. I shake my head.
I think he has commitment issues, I whisper.
I heard that.
Then stay out of my head.
Another wave of paralyzing hunger assaults me, and I nearly crush Markham's scroll in my hand.
Don't be an ass.
I swear I hear him chuff a chuckle in response.
We'd better hurry or we'll miss breakfast.
Right. I finish rolling the scroll and put it back on the cart.
I want to be like the cool kids, Rhiannon grumbles as first years from second and third wings pour out of the stairwell of the turret that leads up to Professor Carr's classroom that afternoon, further clogging the hallway on our way to battle brief. We will, I promise, linking my arm through hers. Have to admit, there's more than a little twinge of jealousy in my chest.
You may be cool, but you will never be as cool as I am.
Riddick pushes past Liam and throws his arm over my shoulder. She's talking about everyone who's already channeling, I explain, juggling my books so I don't drop them. Though, at least if we're not channeling, we're not stressed about manifesting a signet before the magic kills us. The relic in the center of my back tingles, and I can't help but wonder if Andarna's gift has triggered that clock for me.
Oh, I thought we were discussing how I just owned that physics test, he grins. Definitely the highest score in the class.
Rhiannon rolls her eyes. Please, I scored 5 points higher than you.
We stopped counting your grades months ago.
He leans forward slightly.
Your grades in that class make it unfair for the rest of us.
He looks between our shoulders.
Wait, what did you get, Mari? Not getting into the middle of this, Liam responds.
I laugh as we break apart, entering the bottleneck of cadets to get into the briefing room.
Sorry, Sorengale,
someone says, stepping out of the way and tugging their friend with them as we enter the tiered classroom.
Nothing to be sorry about, I call out, but they're already headed up a few rows.
I'm never going to get used to that.
It definitely makes getting places easier, Rhiannon teases as we descend the steps that curve along the massive turret.
They show the appropriate level of deference,
Taryn grumbles. To what they think I'll be, not who I am. We find our row and walk to our seats, sitting as a squad among the first years.
That shows excellent forethought.
The room buzzes with energy as riders file in, and I can't help but notice that no one has to stand anymore. Our numbers have decreased exponentially in the last 4 months. The number of empty chairs is sobering. We lost another first year yesterday when he got too close to another rider's red scorpion tail on the flight field. 1 second he was standing there, and the next he was a scorched patch of earth. I kept as close to Taryn as possible the rest of the session. My scalp prickles, but I fight the urge to turn around.
Ryerson just got here, Liam says from the seat to my right, breaking from the little dragon figurine he's carving and looking up the rows toward the third years.
Figured. I hold up my middle finger and keep my eyes forward. Not that I don't like Liam, but I'm still pissed at Zayden for assigning him. Liam snorts and grins, flashing his dimple.
And now he's glaring. Tell me, is it fun pissing off the most powerful rider in the quadrant?
You could try it yourself and find out, I suggest, opening my notebook to the next empty page. I can't turn around. I won't. Wanting Zayden is fine. It has to be. Indulging the impulses it gives me? That's asinine.
That's going to be a no from me.
I lose the battle with my self-control and look over my shoulder. Sure enough, Zayden is seated in the top row next to Garrick, mastering the art of looking bored. He gives Liam a nod, which Liam returns. I roll my eyes and face forward again. Liam concentrates on his carving, which looks a lot like his red dagger tail day.
I swear, you'd think there were assassination attempts on me during every class, with the way he makes you shadow me.
I shake my head.
In his defense, people are fond of trying to kill you, Rhiannon sets out her supplies. One time! It's happened one time, Rhi.
I adjust my posture to keep my weight off my bruised ribs. They're wrapped tight, but leaning against the back of my seat isn't an option.
Right. And what would you call that whole thing with Tynan?
Rhiannon asks.
Threshing? I shrug. And Barlow's constant threats?
She arches a brow at me.
She has a point there, Sawyer chimes in, leaning forward from the seat next to Rhiannon's.
They're just threats. The only time I've actually been targeted was at night, and it's not like Liam here is sleeping in my bedroom.
I mean, I'm not opposed, he begins, his knife hovering over the piece of wood.
Don't even start. I whip my head to face him and can't help but laugh.
You are a shameless flirt.
Thank you. He grins and goes back to carving.
It wasn't a compliment.
Don't mind her. She's just sexually frustrated. Makes a girl crabby. Rhiannon writes the date down on her empty page and I follow suit, dipping my quill into my portable ink pot. Those easy, messless pens some of the others can already use is just another reason I can't wait to channel. No more quills, no more ink pots.
That has nothing to do with it.
Gods, could she have said that a little louder?
And yet, I don't hear you denying it.
She smiles sweetly at me.
I'm sorry I don't make the cut, Liam teases, but I'm sure Ryerson would be fine with my reviewing a couple candidates, especially if it means you'll stop flipping him off in front of his entire wing.
And how exactly would you be reviewing candidates? What will you be scoring? Rhiannon asks, one eyebrow raised above her wide grin.
This I have to hear.
I manage a straight face for all of 2 seconds before laughing at how horrified he suddenly looks.
Thanks for the offer, though. I'll make sure to run any potential liaisons by you.
I mean, you could watch,
Rhiannon continues, blinking innocently at him,
just to be sure she's fully covered, you know, so no one sticks it to her.
Oh, are we telling dick jokes now? Riddick asks from Liam's side. Because my entire life has led up to this very moment.
Even Sawyer laughs.
Fuck me, Liam mutters under his breath. I'm just saying that since you're protected at night now, we laugh harder and he blows out a deep breath.
Wait, I stop laughing. What do you mean I'm protected at night? Because you're next door?
My smile vanishes. Please tell me he's not making you sleep in the hallway or something obnoxious.
No, of course not. He warded your door the morning after the attack.
His expression clearly says I should know this. I'm guessing he didn't tell you?
He what?
He warded your door, Liam says, quieter this time, so only you can open it.
Shit. I don't know how to feel about that. It's more than slightly controlling and way out of line, but also sweet.
But if he's the one who warded it, then he can get in too, right?
Well, yeah, Liam shrugs as Professors Markham and DeVero walk down the stairs, heading for the front of the room.
But it's not like Ryerson is going to kill you.
Right. You see, I'm still adjusting to that little change of heart. I fumble my quill and it falls to the ground, but before I can lean over, the shadows beneath the arm of my desk lift the instruments like an offering. I pluck it out of the shadows and look back at Zayden. He's locked in conversation with Garrick, not paying me a speck of attention. Except, apparently, he is.
If we can get started, Markham calls over the room.
And we fall silent as he places the scroll Liam and I had delivered to him before breakfast on the podium.
Excellent.
I write Summerton down at the top of the page, and Liam trades his knife for a quill.
First announcement, DeVera says, stepping forward. We've decided that not only will the winners of this year's squad battle receive bragging rights,
she grins like we're in for a treat,
but they'll also be given a trip to the front lines to shadow an active wing.
Cheers break out all around us.
So if we win, we get a chance to die sooner? Rhiannon whispers.
Maybe they're trying a reverse psychology thing. I glance at the others around us who are clearly overjoyed and worry about their sanity. Then again, most everyone in this room can stay on their dragon.
So can you.
Don't you have better things to do with your day than listen in on my self-loathing?
Not particularly. Now pay attention.
Stop butting in and maybe I can, I counter.
Tarn chuffs. One day I might be able to translate that sound, but it's not today.
I know the squad battle doesn't commence until spring, DeVera continues, but I figured that news would give you all the proper motivation to apply yourselves in every area leading up to the challenges.
Another cheer resounds.
And now that we have your attention, Markham lifts his hand and the room quiets. The front lines are relatively quiet today, so we're going to take this opportunity to dissect the Battle of Jaanfar.
My quill hovers above my notebook. Surely he didn't say that.
The mage lights rise to the cliffs of Draelor that separate Tirindor, lifting the entire province thousands of feet above the rest of the continent, before shining brightest on the ancient stronghold along the southern border.
This battle was pivotal to the unification of Navarre, and though it happened more than 6 centuries ago, there are important lessons that still impact our flight formations to this day.
Is he serious? I whisper to Liam.
Yeah. Liam's grip bends his quill. I think he is.
What made this battle unique? DeVera asks, her eyebrows raised. Bryant?
The stronghold was not only set for a siege, the second year says from high above us, but was equipped with the first crossbolt, which proved lethal against dragonkind.
Yes, and, Devera prompts, it was one of the final battles where griffins and dragons actually worked alongside each other to annihilate the army of the barons, the second year continues.
I glance left and right, watching the other riders begin to take notes.
Surreal. This is just surreal.
Even Rhiannon is writing intensely. None of them knows what we do. That an entire village of Navarians was ransacked last night along the border and supplies looted. And yet, we're discussing a battle that happened before the convenience of indoor plumbing was invented?
Now, pay close attention, Markham lectures, because you'll be turning in a detailed report in 3 days and drawing comparisons to battles from the last 20 years.
Was that scroll marked classified? Liam asks under his breath.
No,
I respond just as quietly.
But maybe I missed it?
The battle map doesn't even show activity near the mountain range.
Yeah,
he nods, scratching his quill against the parchment as he begins to take notes.
That has to be it. You missed it.
I blink, forcing my hand through the motions of writing about a battle I've analyzed dozens of times with my father. Liam's right. That's the only possible explanation. Our clearance isn't high enough, or maybe they haven't finished gathering all the information needed to form an accurate report. Or it had to have been marked classified.
I just missed it.